U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
General Motors will lay off 15% of its workforce in the coming months and close a plant in Ohio, and Donald Trump is not happy about it. What's going on in the car business in the United States, and what are the political implications? Welcome, I'm Paul Gigot with The Wall Street Journal, and I'm here with my two colleagues to talk about this development. Alicia Finley, how are you, Alicia?
Hi, Paul.
And Kim Straussel. Hello, Kim.
Hey, Paul.
So let's talk about this. I think it's fascinating. General Motors, of course, the one of the big three with Ford and Chrysler Fiat now in the United States. And Donald Trump made such an issue of reviving the American car business. And he seems to have a fascination with cars and steel in particular, as his two other than real estate, as his two industrial preoccupations. So this General Motors announcement, Alicia, is something of a blow to his political psyche. On the other hand, it's really not all that surprising if you size up the auto business in the United States.
I think that's right. I mean, Trump ran on creating these kinds of blue-collar jobs or retaining them and preventing, quote-unquote, outsourcing. But outsourcing actually really isn't an issue here. It's not moving or shifting production abroad. It's just deciding not to produce cars that weren't selling. These are sedans, compact cars that consumers really aren't buying. About two-thirds of cars nowadays are or that are sold are trucks or SUVs, and it's very unprofitable to produce cars such as these in the U.S., let alone ones that consumers don't buy.
So the Chevy Volt, for example, which is the hybrid car, partly runs on batteries, partly on gasoline, that is also being phased out by General Motors. They're phasing out the Chevy Cruze, which they make at the Ohio plant. So they're basically getting out of the mid-size and compact car business altogether.
Look, that's right. Ford has already done that. Fiat Chrysler as well, or Ford is in the process of doing that. I mean, they're going to continue to produce, or they're pumping a lot of money into electric car or electric vehicles. In part, this is a bet on more regulation in the U.S. as well as abroad. China has mandated electric car vehicle production an increasing amount, and it's betting that that will eventually make its way to the U.S. There's already mandates in some nine states, including California. And while the EPA and Department of Transportation are revising the CAFE, the fuel economy standards,
making them less onerous.
Exactly. I think they're betting that a Democratic administration will ratchet them back up.
So I know, Kim, you can speak with authority as a truck owner and not a small car owner. And so, I mean, this is, as Alicia describes, the reality of the marketplace, the auto marketplace. We're also late into an economic cycle where car sales have been falling off some, the pace of car sales as interest rates have risen. Not surprising, that happens. But Donald Trump doesn't like that, and he really laced into General Motors and Mary Barra and said, He said on Monday that he had spoken with her the evening before and said, you better get something else in that plant other than the Chevy Cruze that you're shutting down.
Well, and the likelihood, by the way, is that General Motors is going to do such a thing. They are talking about shuttering up to five plants, talking about 8,000 white collar jobs. jobs, by the way, that could go away in North America. And then there's this question of about 2,600 blue-collar jobs. But the point here is that there is discussion about shifting production around and that some of those workers may, in fact, not lose their jobs and may follow those jobs in the new production to new plants. This is really common in the auto industry, especially when you are undergoing a big shift, which we are. You know, we talk a lot about political polarization in the country. Well, we're seeing to a certain degree auto polarization. You look more and more into cities where people are simply not buying a car anymore because they are using this amazing new thing called crowdsourcing and auto sharing, so Uber and Lyft, and that has dramatically transformed a lot of urban markets to the extent that they are buying them. They're buying more electric vehicles. Batteries have really increased in terms of their abilities over recent years. You look at, for instance, the Chevy Bolt, which is their electric car. It now gets something like 240 miles per charge. So that, for a lot of city dwellers, is all you need. And then you go out to the rest of the country, though, where there's bigger, wider spaces, and people increasingly, just as a matter of consumer preference, especially as they've become more affordable, are buying SUVs and trucks. And as Alicia said, something like 65% now of all new vehicles in the U.S. are trucks or SUVs. That's a major change from just even 5 years ago, where about 50% of all of the sales were the sedans of the type that GM is no longer going to make. So this is a little bit of a natural shift to accommodate that market. And in some ways, by the way, probably aided to a certain extent by the fact that the Trump administration has given these industries a little bit of breathing room in terms of tax reform and changing auto standards. And so it's a natural time for them to look at it.
But on the other hand, less breathing room to the extent that the steel and aluminum tariffs have raised
Correct.
The costs of making a car. I mean, people say that there's a lot of technology in cars now. Yes, there is. All you have to do is try to look at and think about, imagine fixing one of them, a car engine. You have to be a computer, knowledgeable in computers and electronic systems to do it. But they still do include steel and aluminum. And I think one estimate I saw is that the steel tariffs have raised costs at GM by something like $700 million. And Alicia, I think you've mentioned Ford has mentioned maybe a billion or more. So when you add those costs to production, it does put a greater emphasis on getting a higher margin on each car. So you're going to want to sell higher value vehicles, which is SUVs and trucks, where you have a higher profit margin than you do on four-door sedans.
Well, I think that's right. And again, this is what consumers want to buy. And one irony, I think, here is that the Obama administration kind of forced automakers to become more fuel efficient, but they not only made more sedans, they also made their SUVs and trucks more fuel efficient, which has resulted in, you know, consumers buying them more. I mean, gas prices are still relatively low, but even as they ticked up earlier this year, that did not crimp demand, consumer demand for these cars.
Yeah, I recall the Chevy Malibu that I had when I was in college. I think I bought for something like $500. And it got 8 miles per gallon, and I used to think that I could actually put my foot on the accelerator and watch the fuel gauge go down as I accelerated. It got so little gas mileage, and now even SUVs get decent gas mileage, and that's contributing to it. But Kim, what's the politics of this when you're talking about? I mean, in a way, Donald Trump in assailing General Motors is like King Canute raging against the tides, because the GM has to do what GM has to do to survive in the marketplace.
Yeah, but he's also tried this before. Remember, he's targeted other companies and said, don't you dare move that factory down to wherever you were going to move it, in Mexico or where else. There will be political ramifications for you. I will assail you. That has been the either latent or overt threat. And at times he's got some traction from that. So I think he's attempting to do that here, at least put a spotlight on GM. It's no way to be a president. Economic forces, he should know better than anyone as a longtime businessman, that they are what they are. And the goal should always be to instead be evaluating the underlying circumstances and deciding to what extent government policies are getting in the way of U.S. manufacturing succeeding. And by the way, to give Donald Trump credit, he has done that to some extent. You know, the Republican focus on tax reform, that's been very good for attracting business and helping business in the United States, getting rid of all the rules and regulations they have and reevaluating the corporate average fuel rules that Alicia was mentioning. But as you've also said, they've added a lot of costs too in terms of an unnecessary trade war. And he'd be in a much better, more solid position instead of berating Mary Barra, the CEO of General Motors, to instead be reevaluating their trade policies and yet other things, labor standards, for instance, immigration questions, and a tight labor market that could aid some of these automotive makers.
All right. We're talking about the automobile business and the politics of that and Donald Trump. And you're listening to Potomac Watch from The Wall Street Journal.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at AlibabaPowersBusinesses.com.
You can now listen to Potomac Watch on your Amazon smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal. From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. I'm Paul Gigot with Alicia Finley and Kim Strassel, and we're talking about the General Motors decision to lay off a lot of workers. One good thing about the timing of this, if there's ever a good time to do it, is that the labor market is so strong, Kim. We have 3.7% unemployment nationwide, even lower in some states, and where some of these layoffs will occur. So you're talking about the bounce back being possibilities for work being much greater than they were 8 or 9 years ago.
Yeah, it depends on where you are. There are pockets of places where the unemployment level is not as great. But, you know, for instance, there's been a lot of blowback in Ohio, where Democrats like House Member Tim Ryan and Senator Sherrod Brown have been very harsh and blamed this on the president. Of course, for all the wrong reasons, they're somehow suggesting that the corporate tax reform has allowed GM to get away with bad behavior. This is all political posturing. But, you know, it is true that in places like where that Ohio plant is in Lordstown, that, you know, it's been a little bit rougher if you're a blue collar worker, and there is some concern. So there's now going to be a focus on GM about whether or not you reshift production to some of these places. But overall, you're right. This is a moment at which the unemployment level is relatively low, and there are going to be other job opportunities, even if they're outside of the industry.
The other question, Alicia, I wanted to explore a little bit here is the impact of the new NAFTA on the auto production trends, because the president and his trade negotiator, Robert Lighthizer, negotiated new terms for auto production in the Western Hemisphere, where the share of auto production now has to be, I think, of local content has to be 75%, I believe, and it's up from 67 or so. And more than that, a good chunk of that production has to be at wages that are higher than they are now, and in fact, I think pretty substantially higher for Mexico. And the assumption has been that that will encourage more job, more car production in the United States. But it looks as if the global car trends and consumer tastes and all the other things are going to dwarf any change in trade policy has on car production.
I think that's right. And you said King Canute, and I think that's the metaphor that came to my mind as well. He can't exactly command GM to create cars that aren't popular or don't sell. Here's the $16 in the new NAFTA. They tried to insert, or they have inserted, a mandate of $16 per hour for 40% of a car product. The U.S. trade representative at least said that, you know, they tried to accommodate the U.S. automakers for GM and Fiat. It would really mainly affect the foreign makers, mainly who operate in the South and who utilize more foreign components, you know, perhaps Nissan, Toyota, Honda. But the issue here, again, is that, you know, this isn't production being outsourced. They are just no longer producing, and they're going to continue to produce cars in China because that's where their market is. That's right. There are more cars that are sold in China than in the U.S., and there are certain logistical issues that would make it more expensive and make GM less competitive if they were to produce those cars in the U.S. and then ship them to China. They probably wouldn't be competitive in the Chinese market. And what's important to also note is that under the UAW's collective bargaining agreements, there's a profit sharing. So to the extent that the car makers are more profitable, that actually helps the workers.
One other interesting political point, Kim, is that I noticed that Donald Trump, with his fine-tuned political antenna, took a shot at Sherrod Brown, the Democratic senator from Ohio, newly elected from Ohio, who has negotiated along with, been something of a whisperer to Robert Lighthizer, the trade negotiator, in dealing with NAFTA. But Trump took a shot at Brown for the GM announcement, saying, well, I guess he couldn't do anything to help keep that production plant inside Ohio. And whether that's fair or not, I think we know, we've heard that Sherrod Brown has said he's thinking about running for president against one Donald J. Trump. So you can tell who's paying attention to those tea leaves.
Yep. And Trump, of course, gave him new elevation there. So now a lot of people who've never heard of Sherrod Brown now know who he is and that he is a possible contender versus the president. Look. The interesting aspect, I think, of this in terms of politics is that we do have this, and you know, I don't use this word in a bad way, but this more populist tendency in which you see some alignment on both the left and the right, in Donald J. Trump's politics, at least. And you certainly see that in terms of his knee-jerk views on trade. And so as we move into this next presidential cycle and we watch what happens with the new Democratic Congress, there's what we hope is that there isn't going to be a race to the bottom there in terms of seeing who can be most protectionist and who can be most pro-blue-collar union, for instance, but rather who's going to do better for the economy. But that risk is there, and you see little shadows of that in terms of that back and forth between those two men.
All right. Thank you, Kim. Thank you, Alicia. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back tomorrow with another edition of Potomac Watch.
U.S. businesses thrive on Alibaba's online marketplace, where sales by American companies to Chinese consumers added $53 billion to the U.S. economy in 2022. Discover more at alibabapowersbusinesses.com.